Going Linux, episode 258, Computer America, number 78. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy. Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux. We hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. In today's episode, Computer America.
Broadcasting live, it's America's longest-running national radio talk show on computers, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. Look for Craig's weekly column in your favorite newspaper. This show is being beamed nationwide at ComputerAmerica.com. Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Hello, and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Computer America is heard around the world and coast to coast. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And it is the third Thursday of the month. And you know what that means? It's time for our All Linux show! That's right. If you have any interest in Linux or you've been thinking about, you know, giving it a try, dipping that toe into the water to see could Linux be for you, or you're getting ready to upgrade to the next version of Windows and you're saying, you know, I don't want to go there anymore. I want to try something else.
I want to be a rebel.
I want to be a rebel. I just want to do things differently, and I don't want to spend all that money anymore. I mean, Linux could be the operating system of choice for you, you know, but you won't know unless you listen in and give it a try, you know? And Linux makes it so easy to do that. You can actually try Linux without abandoning the current operating system you're using. So, you know, so if you have any questions or comments or suggestions about anything having to do with Linux, you know, we're here tonight to help you on that. Okay, so that said, let's get our guest here. He's waiting in the wings right now. And as I mentioned, it's the third Thursday of the month, and that means it's time for Linux. The Linux operating system continues to become more and more popular. It's an important operating system, so every month we devote an entire Computer America show to the subject of Linux. And if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Now, joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome to Computer America. How are you?
I am doing wonderfully. I have an excellent topic for tonight.
Yes, you do.
Can't wait to get into it.
Yes, you do. Now, we also asked Larry to pick a topic for the two-hour show. And again, this is just a suggestion for a topic, and we're going to speak on it. But if your question is off that topic, it doesn't matter. As long as it's having to do something with Linux, that's all that matters, okay?
Yeah, we're happy to go off topic.
Right. But tonight's topic that Larry picked was, get this, Apple was right! Exclamation point. Yes, he continues on. The magic of hardware and operating system made for each other. There it is. So that's the topic, and we're going to speak about that on our show notes page. So, Larry, why don't you – I'm going to go ahead and fix the dates. Why don't you go ahead and start talking about the topic and get us started, okay?
Okay. Well, this isn't becoming the Going Apple podcast by any stretch, but I have to admit that I believe that Apple is right about building hardware and software that work together. And the reason for that is – there's a bit of a story. First, almost 2 years ago, I made the decision to upgrade my trusty 14.1-inch HP Pavilion computer. It's a notebook. By maxing out the RAM to 8 gigabytes, that's all it could take, and replacing the original 500 gigabyte spinning hard drive with a 512 gigabyte solid state drive, thinking that I could get some additional life out of this about 2-year-old computer, and I thought, well, let's see if it can last a little bit longer. Maybe I can get another couple of years out of it, and let's upgrade it and make it perform a little bit better. Well, that just worked fine. It did perform faster. And although it wasn't going to ever have the longer battery life of the newest Ultrabooks that I was looking at 2 years ago, the upgrades were much more economical than buying another new computer. And the SSD was reliable and fast. And as I said, I got almost a full 4 years out of that old HP. But last month, the time had finally come to replace it. Craig knows that I've had some issues with sound cards and other things that I kept blaming on Microsoft's Skype, which I'm still not convinced that isn't part of the problem, at least. But the computer was showing its age, so I decided to buy a new Ultrabook.
But Larry still looks the same, regardless. He
didn't upgrade here. Yeah, so, yeah. But the computer is better. It is new, and it is a 14.1-inch. I wanted to go with an Ultrabook again. I went with the Galago Ultra Pro from System 76. And if you're familiar with Linux, you might know that System 76 is a supplier of computers only running Linux. In fact, they only provide computers running Ubuntu Linux. And that's the model that I chose, the Galago Ultra Pro. And we've got a link in the show notes if you want to take a look at the bare-bone system that I chose. You can take a look at it. It's pretty nice looking, I think, and it's plenty speedy in my criteria for buying a computer. And I knew that what I wanted to do is buy a computer from a vendor that pre-installs Linux. And I also knew that buying from a company like System 76 or Zareason, and there are several others out there, that would provide me with hardware that's guaranteed to run Linux. Mm-hmm. I was tired of having to make older hardware work. And certainly I've got the skills and experience to make just about any computer run Linux. But I decided I wanted to have something that was guaranteed to run Linux, and by buying from one of these companies, I knew that since they provided these computers with Linux on them, that they would run Linux no problem.
Yeah, and by the way, just as a side here, you say that the camera that you're using now is a lower pixel, but quite frankly, I think it looks better.
It is 1 megapixel, and on my HP, I think it was...
Yes, Ben.
Are you saying Larry Bushy looks better with lower resolution?
Maybe so.
But you can see more of the...
It is an HD camera instead of a 640 by 480
You see more of the room, too, behind them, too. You get more view.
Well, maybe that's what it is. You see more of the room to distract you from.
See, I can only see the penguin, you know, just a little bit to the left of the penguin before... But now, I mean, I can see, you know, I see everything. I see the books, the lamp.
Craig, you're creeping, Craig.
Can you read the title on the book?
I can see the next room.
Oh, man. But hopefully, well, going with a lower resolution camera, maybe you can't read the titles on the books and you could have read them before. But anyway, I decided I was going to go for a pre-installed Linux computer. So that's what I did. And one of the things about System 76 is it doesn't manufacture their own computers. They purchase them from China from a company called Clevo, if I remember the name correctly. Mm-hmm. But they do select the models and the components to ensure that Linux runs smoothly and compatibly on the hardware. What I didn't know in going into this is how much of a difference that very thing makes.
Really?
Having the hardware work with, we're designed to work with the software. And I've been using my new Ultrabook now for a couple of weeks, and I have to say that the magic that Apple credits with making all of its products just work is real. and it's not only available just from Apple. It's available for Linux as well. And these days, I guess it's available for Windows too, if you get a Windows Surface tablet, hardware built for Windows. But having had the experience of running Windows on generic hardware, and had the experience of running Linux on generic hardware, and running OS X on Apple hardware, I could tell the difference with Apple. You click on something, and for the most part, you're pretty much guaranteed that it works. I've run into a few things that didn't quite work, even though the software was designed by and supplied by Apple. There were a couple of hiccups there. But that occurred more frequently with generic hardware and either Windows or Linux. So I thought this time around, since it was time to replace the hardware again, rather than upgrade or rather than get another generic computer, I would get something that something that's designed to run Linux from the start.
And the 14.1 Galago Ultra Pro, they're calling it the ultimate ultra portable. I mean, I'm looking at pictures of it here. It looks really nice. I mean, I obviously can't see it because, well, you're using it. So, and the camera is built in, right? You're using the camera that's built into the lid here? Is that what
yes.
you're doing? Yeah, exactly.
Right, yep.
So, but it seems – and although your experience in the past has been with, as you say, retrofitting computers that were running, let's say, Windows and doing it all yourself, and you as a Linux expert still see is it a tighter system? I mean, when I say tight, I mean everything is just coming together and working perfectly, literally out of the box, and you don't have to do any special tweaking or updating. Or I mean, the purpose or the point of buying a computer from these people, System 76, is they're taking the pain out of it. Really, it sounds to me like what you're saying.
Right.
If there's much pain, because Linux, you still, can still be, although it's so certainly so much better, still Linux can be the tweaker's operating system, and you have to find, well, what version of Linux do I want, and, what do I want to do, and then I need to set this up, and let me try it first on my other system, and of course,
right.
There are a lot of little gotchas, but when you get it, and that's why you're saying Apple is right, you're saying that the fact that you're taking this beautiful computer system, fresh, new, out of the box, and it's been done for you by professionals in Linux from System 76, you're saying that there is definitely value to that.
Well, yes. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Okay. Not for the reason that you just implied.
Okay. Well,
The way I heard what you said is that because Linux is pre-installed on the system, that it performs better.
Well, it's not.
You can say that for Windows machines because, let's face it, if you buy a machine to run Windows, it typically has Windows already on it.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with Apple. It's running OS X when you. And with Linux, though, although this was running, notice the past tense, this was running Ubuntu when I bought it.
Mm-hmm. You had to tinker.
I still have to tinker. And it's that experience in tinkering that tells me that it's not just because it was pre-installed with Linux that it works better.
Mm-hmm.
It works better because all of the components,
the drivers,
the hardware components more than anything else, if not designed to run Linux, then certainly selected by System 76 to be compatible with Linux and to just work with Linux. And of course, with Apple, they manufacture their own
hardware,
or at least design their own hardware, mm-hmm. and have it manufactured for them. I'm sure they manufacture some of their own as well, but they install OS X on there, and they control both the hardware and the software, and so they have very tight control over things. And that's that's one side of this. The other side of it is that with System 76 or even Xeon or any of the others that actually handpick the hardware to put Linux on it before selling you the computer with Linux pre-installed, it's designed to run the operating system. And because of that, when you get the computer, it works because it's already pre-installed. But even if you were to uninstall and reinstall and put another version of Linux on here, it will continue to just work and work well because it's designed for Linux, any Linux. It doesn't have to be the original Linux that was on there. In fact, Xeon will install a number of different versions of Linux on there. You select what you want. System 76, on the other hand, they provide it with only Ubuntu. That's the only Linux they install and the only Linux they provide support for. However, they do allow you to install another Linux on there, and they will continue to support your hardware for you. Now, they're not going to support the software. They're not going to support another version of Linux, but they will support Ubuntu for as long as you have it on there. So if you upgrade to a later version of Ubuntu, they'll continue to support it. If you switch to, I don't know, Fedora and then download another copy of Ubuntu and reinstall it, they're going to continue to support it. In fact, their recovery disk is an Ubuntu live CD. It is just Ubuntu software. It is not anything special. In fact, their support site says if you need to reinstall, just go to Ubuntu's site, download the live CD and install it from there.
Now, there's no special version of, this Ubuntu is the standard. Are there special drivers for this particular Ultrabook that you have so it works with the hardware correctly and everything, or does it auto-detect it? Or, because that's what Apple does, because we're talking about Apple, you know, when they make their OS X, it's going to look at the version of Mac, if you have a MacBook Pro, if you've got a MacBook, if you've got an iMac, you know, and the configuration and it kind of fits itself to that. Is that what happens with Ubuntu?
Well, I don't think so in the case of my particular hardware. Now, I can't speak for the other hardware from System 76, but I did notice that they have a System 76 driver for the computer. And when I replaced Ubuntu with another version of Linux, it was an Ubuntu-compatible version of Linux. You can probably guess which one. I went to System 76 site, downloaded that driver, and ran it. And it didn't appear to install anything. It didn't install any special driver for the video. It didn't install any special driver for the camera or for the wireless card or anything that I could see. It seemed to be a shell that you could just subscribe to, essentially, and if they did come up with a driver update specifically for your model, it would come to you through that channel. But it may be that for other models, they have special drivers for the hardware to make it work with Ubuntu. But typically, that's something that Ubuntu provides. As opposed to System 76. So I'm not exactly sure what that is, that System 76 driver, and I haven't thought to ask them, and I think I might just do that now. I didn't see that it actually installed anything. It did appear in the menu, and I ran it. It appeared to do something, but I didn't see any changes to my system.
I have an Origin PC, not System 76 or anything, and I know a driver is a little bit more base, you know, is a little bit more, ground level, basic than anything else, or than a particular user type. But I know that with Origin PC, you know, the things that they loaded on there, like they installed everything and, you know, and did all the drivers and things like that. The only thing they put on were like desktops, backgrounds, screensavers, things like that. Could that have been, you know, what it was? It was kind of like their watermark, you know, that they could put somewhere on the system?
It's possible. Like I said, I really don't know what they've done. And it's still running on there, but I did run it for a little while without that driver. and I didn't notice any difference before or after. So
you think you should ask them? That's a good point. Say, what is this driver doing for me? I took it off and ran the generic one, and I don't see a difference. And then the tech guy will say, yeah, well, that's because, and that's it.
Exactly. So I will ask the question and find out what's going on. But my main point here is that when you use hardware that's made for Linux, everything just works just as it does on an Apple computer. And you don't have to mess to find the right drivers for your hardware. You don't need to worry that the display might need a tweak to get it working. And you don't have to mess with the sound card or any other component that I can see. And the advantages of having hardware and software that are designed for each other,
enormous.
It's enormous, and it gives you a Linux computer that just works just as it does for Apple devices with their hardware and software working together.
Would you say that working with your brand new System 76 computer as opposed to – now, what was it you had before? I'm sorry, what was it?
I had an HP.
HP. And how long did you have the HP?
4 years.
All right, so your four-year-old HP and the brand new System 76 model. Would you say that would you say that this one is less glitchy? I mean, I know it's a broad term, but I'm trying to give you. Were there hiccups with that and that had to go through and everything? And which you don't have
one
to.
One of the things they didn't have was probably bloatware that tends to come with a lot of.
That's another
Windows.
Good point. Yeah, bloatware. Yeah, exactly. I mean, is it a smoother experience for you?
Yes, it was less glitchy. When I installed Linux Mint on here, it started up, and I knew that it was going to work out of the box because it's designed to run Linux, and Linux Mint, of course, is Linux, and I knew it wasn't going
to. So let's continue on. Go ahead.
There we go. Okay, so speaking of glitches, so I think it was an HP 6700 or something like that was either running Windows XP or Windows Vista when I first purchased it. And I installed whatever version of Linux I was running at the time, probably Ubuntu. And on that computer, it had a Broadcom wireless card. Mm-hmm. And Broadcom, the older models were notorious for not being compatible with Linux, and you had to jump through hoops. And I did have to do that on that older machine. And that's the kind of glitch that most computer users, especially those that just want their hardware to work, mm-hmm. don't want to mess with. And that has turned a lot of people off.
All right. Well, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to continue on. Now, you listen to the Computer America Show. It's our all Linux show here on the Blog Talk Radio Network. And we'll be right back. Stay with us.
And welcome back to the Computer America Show. It's our all Linux show. And we have Larry Bush here. And before we get back to, was the experience glitchy, with this computer, we were just talking about a question, what does the System 76 driver do? And it turns out one of our audience members is a better Googler than any of us, apparently, and actually found the answer. So, I thought, Larry, that you might like to read, exactly what that is and explain what they do with that.
Okay, so from iNet Ken, thanks, Ken. From the System 76 site, the System 76 driver adds devices that aren't natively supported by Ubuntu. For some machines, this means support for a microphone or a card reader. For other machines, all devices are supported out of the box. The System 76 driver is also used to restore your system using a standard Ubuntu disk. So, since I didn't notice any drivers for microphones or card readers or any of the other hardware components, the restore is probably the only thing that driver is doing for me, and I'm not going to restore to Ubuntu, so I think I'll remove it.
There you go.
Yeah.
So even the stuff that comes pre-installed from System 76 is not required and or mandatory. You can even take that off and just have a completely clean slate.
Right, exactly. So if there are any components there that are not as compatible with Linux as System 76 would like, they're providing the driver as part of this System 76 driver. I don't know whether they write them themselves or whether they're packaging up drivers from other places, but they're doing the hard work to find the driver that works. And that's the key thing there. So you don't have to go online and look for drivers to make something work. And I was talking about the HP 6700 computer that I had some time ago, and that Wi-Fi card, that's exactly what I had to do. I had to go find the driver. And at the time I was looking for it originally, there wasn't an open source driver available. So I actually had to pull the driver off of the Windows system and use some software that actually allows Linux to use the Windows driver for that hardware. And that worked for a while until Linux caught up and there was an open source driver available in a future version of Ubuntu or whatever Linux I was using at the time. And so I didn't have to go through those hoops. So they cut up on that. And these days, most computer hardware is supported under Linux, with the possible exception of the newest, if the developer of that hardware is not particularly diligent about making sure that there's a Linux driver for it available. And even with that, it doesn't take long for the open source community to develop a driver for that particular hardware, especially if it's something that is especially popular. And in my last computer, the HP Pavilion DM4, which was a 14-inch laptop, notebook computer, the only glitch that I had with it was in the end. You know, the hardware started to fail on me. So at the very beginning, even booted into Windows 7 or whatever was on there at the time, I think I immediately wiped it and installed Linux right there. I took a chance that there would be hardware compatibility all around, and I won out on that bet. But that's really the point in buying a computer that has Linux pre-installed in it. You don't have to make that gamble. You are guaranteed that it's going to work because the supplier of the hardware has already vetted the hardware and ensures that it is indeed going to be run.
Well, let me ask you this then. Are you saying to anyone who wants to get into Linux for them to either sell or get rid of or their current system and go with one like from System 76 and avoid all the headaches that they might have if they get they just go ahead and get the System 76? I mean, if they've been trying Linux or they say, you know, I like it, I want to do it, then don't put it on your existing system. You know, either sell that or waterfall it to the kids and go out and get yourself one from System 76. Are you saying that?
I'm saying that if that's important to that person. So if you're the kind of person that likes to experiment around and try things and you like the experience of researching a problem and finally solving it, then by all means, take some old piece of crap junk Windows machine or an old retired MacBook or Apple Tower or, you know, whatever, and try installing Linux on it. You'll find that for the most part it will work, and maybe there will be one little piece of hardware that doesn't work quite right, and then you've got to go and find out what the problem is. Mm-hmm. And if you're the kind of person who loves tinkering, that's perfect for you. Mm-hmm. But if you're the kind of person that when you buy your computer, you want it to work, and you don't want to mess with it, and you don't want to be experimenting around with it. Once you've got something installed on there, you're not going to change it. Then System 76, if you want to run Linux, is probably one of the best ways to go, and any of the other vendors out there that provide this. And you know, there are some computer suppliers who purchase computers from other manufacturers like Lenovo or Dell and install Linux on them for you. And those will work just fine. because they've pre-configured them for you. But unless they have handpicked that model because it has compatible hardware, you may, if you decide to replace or upgrade to a newer version of Linux, you may find that you have some hardware in there that they provided a special driver for that might be a little difficult for you to get working. And that's one of the downsides of Windows as well. So there is a reason why Windows is pre-installed when you buy a computer. And I don't know whether it started back in the good old days when IBM decided that it would allow the creation of the PC clones, because IBM was PC back in those days, and they decided, okay, yeah, we're going to allow generic manufacturers to make clone hardware, and we'll put DOS on there, or we'll provide DOS, and it'll work just fine. Well, one of the things that happened is that because of that, in today's world, when designing the software, the folks at Microsoft have to consider hardware compatibility. There are many, many hundreds, maybe even thousands of vendors out there for any particular computer component that could go into a Windows machine. On the plus side, that's created a market for all kinds of Windows computers, from inexpensive underpowered netbooks, or worse, to screaming liquid-cooled gaming-optimized supercomputers like the one that Ben uses. And there's a vast array anywhere along that spectrum. And that's a good thing, because for someone on a budget, there's a Windows computer. For someone who doesn't have a budget or needs that liquid-cooled gaming machine to run their games, and money is no object, they can go ahead and you are paying for this out of your own money, right, Ben?
it's company money, so we can have fun.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Yes, it's for evaluation purposes only. So there, and that's the advantage, but the disadvantage is that it's impossible for Microsoft to ensure that Windows as an OS and the Windows applications will run perfectly on each and every model of computer that's out there. And that's the reason why Windows comes pre-installed when you buy it from computer manufacturers like Acer and Asus and Dell and HP, Lenovo, Samsung, Toshiba, and the hundreds of other manufacturers that are out there. Those manufacturers will find and configure the drivers for you. And once they've built the hardware, they go and do that. They will tweak the display settings. They'll go out and work out the kinks in the networking. They'll configure the Wi-Fi settings, and they'll apply the patches that have the workaround for the bug in the Wi-Fi card that the guys in marketing just insisted on using because it had better specs than the competitive machine they were trying to outsell, and on and on and on. The things that those manufacturers do to get Windows working, and if you decide when you buy a Windows computer that you want to upgrade to the next version of Windows, or you simply need to reinstall Windows from scratch and you don't have a recovery disk or you don't have a recovery partition, boy, are you in for some fun. And I've done this, trying to find the right drivers, trying to make things work, trying to find, in the old days, it was IRQ conflicts and those kinds of things. So, lots of different trouble that you can have.
So are you saying then that these on a price basis, is it are computer systems from System 76 equal to or less costly than you going out and doing it yourself, getting a Windows machine and installing Linux on it that way?
No, because if you were to – well, let me back off on that. Not – normally, because you could, I suppose, go out and buy a Lenovo with no operating system on it, but you're not going to save all that much money because Lenovo and all of these other manufacturers of computer hardware buy Windows with so cheaply that it might as well be free to them. And they do provide a bit of a markup, but because they don't support it and Microsoft doesn't support Windows for these OEM versions, they don't have to bear the costs of support either for the operating system. And yes, you can go and you can pay HP some money, or Lovo some money, or Microsoft some money for support if you need it. But if you've ever tried to get support for the operating system from them, you may realize that that's not really economical either. But getting back to your question, Craig, about the potential savings in cost because you're putting a free operating system on there, no. You're not going to save any money because most of the money in a computer is from the hardware itself, not from the operating system anyway. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, Apple gives away OS X these days, and apparently Microsoft gives away Windows these days as well.
Yeah, it seems to be heading in that direction. What about all the bloatware that comes on your computer? Do they put bloatware on the? Did you get a lot of bloatware on your system or not?
None whatsoever. It was plain vanilla Ubuntu out of the box. The only thing that System 76 added was that special driver that allows you to do a restore and potentially had some hardware drivers in there as well, which I don't think mine did. So there is no bloatware, there's no adware, there's no special versions of software that when you click on it, it'll run for 10 days and then it'll stop working, or nothing that is going to add the Bonsai Buddy toolbar to your browser or anything like that. None of that. It is exactly the same as though you had gone and you had gone to China and purchased the Clevo model, whatever it is, from the original manufacturer of the hardware and installed Ubuntu on there yourself. So what do you get, you ask, when buying from System 76? Well, you get a warranty from System 76. Which is a one-year warranty, and of course you can purchase additional years of warranty if you so choose from the manufacturer. And that warranty, of course, includes a warranty for the hardware as well as support for the software during that warranty period. So they will support Ubuntu. And in fact, Ubuntu provides System 76 a section in their Ubuntu forum specifically for System 76 users. So System 76 and Ubuntu have some sort of deal going on, I'm sure. As a result, you can call them up on the phone. You can send them an email, and they will respond. I have sent them a couple of emails asking questions, and they have been very responsive. And I haven't yet called them on the phone, but I know of people who have, and they are friendly and helpful. And willing to answer your questions, whether it's a hardware question or a question about Ubuntu. So,
but they ask,
helpful.
Do they do ask you, they pre-qualify, they say, you know, what is the serial number of your this or whatever to identify that you, what do they do?
Well, when you, I've only asked the questions through their support channel on the website.
Yeah.
And because when you purchase a computer from them, you register the computer. When you go in through their support channel, they already have all of that information, so you never have to provide it. It goes with your question. They know what you've got, what you bought, and so on. So one of the questions I asked them is this particular model of computer comes with one of the SSD drives on a PC card. It's not a removable drive as the main boot up drive. And there's a bay inside for an external drive, well, not an external drive, an internal drive, so a standard laptop drive. And you can put in there a spinning drive or an SSD drive. You can order one from them. You can order up to a 1 terabyte SSD, which would have put the computer well out of my reach financially.
Yeah.
But I had that 512 gigabyte SSD drive that I had purchased for my HP.
Mm-hmm.
So my intent was to take it out of there and put it into the empty bay in the System 76, which I did. But before doing that, I noticed that there was, unlike on some computers, a nice little bay door that you open up and you just slide the drive in and away you go. I actually had to remove the back, turn the computer upside down and remove the bottom of the computer 17 screws.
You counted them?
Yes. And good thing is they were all the same size and shape, which was not the case with my HP. So I didn't even have to keep track of the screws. But the 17 screws, and the hard drive went in very nicely, the SSD drive. But before I did any of that, sent them an email on the support site, or logged into the support site and sent them a question that said, I understand that I need to remove the bottom of the computer to put in this drive, which I've already purchased and I have had for some time. Does it void my warranty to open the back of the computer? Mm. Their answer was, no. Here's how to take the screws out, and good luck.
Wow.
So they have no problem with you purchasing, if the model that you purchase has a spare slot for an external drive, I keep saying external drive, for an internal laptop drive, you can purchase that drive from them, have them pre-install it, or you, if you already have a drive that you want to use, as I did, you can install it in there, and they continue to support the original hardware. They're not going to support the drive, of course, that I put in there, but they'll support everything else. And as long as my drive doesn't damage their hardware, no problem. So, and I used the Ubuntu operating system for as long as I could stand it, and then decided that I wanted to install Linux Mint on there, and the folks at System 76 have no problem with that either.
Really? So you're saying for the most part it was painless.
It was absolutely painless. The only pain I had. Here's the other shoe.
Has to be a little pain. Okay.
Yeah, a little bit of pain. Yeah. So when I first got it, opened it up, tried to connect to my Wi-Fi router, and it wouldn't connect.
Ah. Okay.
And so my previous experience was go find out on the internet what's wrong with the Wi-Fi driver, with the Wi-Fi card.
Mm-hmm.
So I did some research, and there are the hardware that they use is an Intel Wi-Fi wireless card.
Mm-hmm.
And this wireless card has a lot of entries in the System 76 forums with a lot of angry people. It also has a lot of entries on the Intel forum with a lot of angry people, Linux users and Windows users. And one of the solutions I found was upgrade the software on your Wi-Fi router, which I did. And now my Wi-Fi card connects no problem. So... As a wireless N connected Wi-Fi card, it actually is capable of AC, but I have a wireless N Wi-Fi router. Apparently the Wi-Fi card from Intel is using the current standard of wireless N. And there are a lot of old routers out there, N routers, that are pre the official spec on wireless N, and so they have some old software, old firmware in there. And as soon as I updated the firmware in the router, everything worked perfectly.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned. I mean, hardware kind of you know affecting software like that, and this is not only to the Linux community. Let's face it. I mean, you see this all the time in Windows. As a matter of fact, last night, here's a perfect example. Ben's mother's laptop would not.
I think that's your wife.
Yeah, my wife.
Just want to lay the family tree out there.
All right, my wife's laptop, which was working with Firefox, you know, wonderful. All of a sudden, stopped working with Firefox. She went to a website. She went to Kayak, and she said, "Oh, you know, I saw a bunch of things happening, and ever since she went to Kayak, it would just come up, and everything was black." So I ran Chrome. Chrome ran fine. Went back. I said, "Okay." So I started Firefox in safe mode. That worked. So I said, "Okay, so maybe it's a plugin." So I went in there, turned all the plugins, turned them off, you know, and then when I started up again, nope. Nothing. So I updated. Let me update Firefox. It was the latest version. I updated again. Maybe something went. Would not run. It only in safe mode. It would not run. And I even I ran anti-malware. I did everything. I said it just would. When I ran normally, for some reason, Firefox went away. And then I looked at it, what it was doing is I was seeing a lot of black area. When I went to try to go to a menu, it would just be a black square would appear. It was like it was trying to display something, but whatever it was trying to display wouldn't display it. I said, okay, this has got to be something with hardware. It had to be. And so I went back and I went to the configuration and I turned off hardware acceleration because that's the first thing. Wouldn't you know, it works. So I even went and I updated the Intel hardware driver. I think maybe it's an old driver. Try that. That didn't work. But the moment I turned off hardware acceleration in the Firefox setup, the configuration works perfectly. So now she's not using hardware acceleration, but I can't. You know, it's stuff like that that just drives you up a wall. You know, and there's no explanation for it. So it does happen. Not only
there are a couple billion computers out there nowadays.
Yeah.
Not every one of them is going to play nice with the other.
Yeah, but it worked perfectly. Like it was working fine up to like last night, and then it's decided it's not going to work anymore. I'm trying to turn off hardware. So, but nothing tells you that. You just have to use some common sense. That's what tipped me off. The fact that it looked like it was trying to display, but the hardware, it was the video. I first updated the video drivers. Everything. There was the NVIDIA drivers, and there was the Intel graphics drivers, everything. I updated it all. Just one day it decided not to work until you turn off the hardware acceleration.
Right. So is this a Windows computer?
Yeah, it's a Windows computer. Yeah.
And you see, I think it's more of a problem on Windows than on Apple hardware, primarily because, Apple makes their hardware and their software to work together. Mm-hmm. And you can rely on the Apple hardware being pretty consistent from model to model, much mm-hmm. more so than you can computers, hardware design.
And that's true. But for this to stop working, one day, it worked perfectly. And the only thing that she could tie it is that she went to a Kayak website and it opened up a bunch of other like windows behind it, and she mm-hmm. said, I didn't do that. And so she turns it off and then started it up again. And from that point on, it wouldn't work.
Right. And that may have been just coincidence. It may have been.
Yeah, it may have been.
Happened to happen at the same time as this problem started to manifest.
Yeah, this tweaking stuff. But you see, it does. It happens on all platforms.
Well, it does.
It's not only just Linux, but you can have situations on Windows. This is Windows 7. It's a good, solid operating system. But even with Windows, never with Mac, but with Windows, you can have.
I can say firsthand that I refute that last comment. I didn't used to be able to make that claim firsthand, but now I can since I have a.
And I couldn't even. And Ben
was computer for work.
And Ben wasn't even here, so I couldn't blame Ben for doing something.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Dog.
It was a dog. Exactly.
I mean, I've done some stupid stuff, like going into the registry and like I tried to switch my C and D partitions.
Oh, that.
And I went to
painful.
The registry and just insert D to C and C to D, and that almost broke my computer completely.
I remember that he was in pain. I mean, he was spent hours.
It was trying to find. It was trying to go to the registry with C, but all the files were still in C. But it was redirecting it to D, so it was just going in a big circle that wouldn't go anywhere.
And finally, he was able. Did you put it in some sort of safe mode or something? He was finally able to get in there and put it back. But just to put it back.
I think most people who tinker and most people who like to play with it, I think I ran into what most people do eventually, and that. It kind of worked itself out.
Wow.
I didn't really do anything.
That's now you really should be worried. All right, listen, we're at the top of the hour. We're going to continue on. We're going to finish. We got a few more things, and then we're going to our email. You're listening to the Computer America Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, on the Boost Radio Network, and the IRN Radio Network. This is Computer America. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. I'm not going anywhere.
broadcasting live. It's the only national radio talk show on computers to air every weeknight. Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. The first hour's behind us, but there's still more of tech news, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide at ComputerAmerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America.
Woo-hoo!
Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello, and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And Larry Bushy, the creator of the Going Linux podcast, continues on with us for the rest of the show. And we're talking about Apple. The topic being that Apple did it was right. The magic of hardware and the operating system made for each other, and all the wonderfulness that goes along with that. Larry's talking about he has his brand new 14.1-inch Galago Ultra Pro system from System 76, which had Linux already pre-installed on it. It worked like a dream out of the box. Again, if you have a comment, question, suggestion, 347-884-8881. We'll get you on and get you through. Email live, L-I-V-E, at ComputerAmerica.com, or join us in our live interactive at IRC chat room at our homepage at ComputerAmerica.com. Just click the chat room / video page. You can watch the live Computer America video streaming on that same page as well. It's all there. It's available for you. And again, if you go to our show notes page at ComputerAmerica.com, I have updated the years now, so they're correct. 2014, 10-16-2014, it's our All Linux show. You'll see our show notes page there. We have Larry Bushy listed, and the two links, which is the show notes, which is what we're doing now, and also the emails, which we'll be doing a little bit later on in the program. So where are we now on the show notes at this point? Because we've kind of been the back and forth. Where are we in the list?
Yeah, we have. We've talked about the computer that I bought, and we've talked about why Windows is pre-installed, and basically mm-hmm. it's because there is so much variability in the hardware. Mm-hmm. The original hardware manufacturer generally has to install it to get everything working correctly. Mm-hmm. Find the right drivers, install it, make mm-hmm. sure things are tweaked properly, mm-hmm. adjust the registry, mm-hmm. put on all the crapware for you, and
exactly.
All that other good stuff that goes along with it. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why OS X comes pre-installed as well, and it's not the same reason by any stretch. Mm-hmm. So unlike the generic IBM original PCs where they made clones, Apple had clones for a while, but they put a stop to that. Mm-hmm, I think mm-hmm. it was Steve Jobs who did that after returning to Apple, eliminated the generic Mac hardware. And that was done many years ago. It's resulted in a very limited selection of vendors that are approved to produce the hardware that makes it onto Apple's short list of approved vendors.
But it's so sweet. I mean, when you take, if you had to bring your Apple in for repair, it is because it's a closed system, they literally, the repair guy takes an Ethernet cord.
Yes, go up to the bar, you drop your computer off, they take your hands, they give you a little manicure while you wait.
They plug the
massage your scalp with the shampoo.
They plug the Ethernet cord right into it, and it just logs into Apple computer. It knows the serial number.
They plug
everything.
Lovingly.
They know about everything about that computer, and it makes the recommendation. It diagnoses it, sees what's wrong, tells you what's wrong with it, gives it the recommendations to fix it. I mean, it's just a work of – it's so nice just to see that happen. It's amazing.
Yeah, and so because they have a limited selection of hardware, it makes it very easy to service.
Yeah, exactly.
And it means that Apple's operating system and application software can be written without the need to consider hardware outside of that very special list. So that makes it easy for developers.
Yeah.
And software creators know that there are only a certain number of hard drives and RAM chips and display drivers and screen resolutions, processors, network cards, power supplies, and other hardware components to consider. Lots of components to consider, but only a certain number of kinds that
right.
they have to worry about. And that is, as a result, they have a finite list of hardware to test their software against. And in an effort to ensure that it works flawlessly, they, of course, do test it on the hardware, But they don't have to test an Acer model and an Asus model and an HP model and a Lenovo model, because there's only one model. And there may be different varieties of that model, although you might just go in and say, I need a MacBook Air. You've got to answer quite a few questions before you get the version that you want with the right amount of hard drive and RAM and everything else. But they're all basically the same. You know, same shell, same slots that the stuff goes into. It's just how big, you know. So it's the reason that Apple computers come pre-installed with OS X is because OS X is what the hardware is designed to run. I mean, that's why they install it, because what else are you going to put on there? Of course, you can dual boot with other things, and you can use Boot Camp, and you can use this, and you can use that, but it's designed for OS X. So that's what they put on it. That's what they support. And that's the same kind of thing that System 76 is doing with this hardware. They pre-install it too, because that's what it's designed to run. And as a result, you end up with something that may not be designed aesthetically out of one piece of aluminum that's machined to very fine specs and, you know, covered in Corinthian leather and all that sort of stuff.
With tiny little screws.
But you get a computer that runs extremely well, that runs out of the box, and that you can change the operating system to another version of Linux and have it run equally well. And what you do get with System 76 that you don't get with an Apple computer, though, is the ability to change the hard drive, to swap out the battery, to add more RAM, to do those kinds of things. And although older models of Apple let you do that, the newer models more and more are not. And that's giving...
Well, those newer models, you mentioned,
and of course, it makes them harder to service as a result.
Well, that's true. You know, I talked to an Apple technician not too long ago, and that was one his only complaint. I mean, it was easy; it identified everything. But he says these new, the latest ones. I don't know if you look at the newer Macs. I mean, they're razor thin. You know, the edges, because they took out the CD drive and they made an external. He says you will not believe when you pull it. I said the glass and everything, even with the proper tools. He says it's a bear trying, you know, to open these things and get to it. I mean, it's difficult because the tolerances that they're working on with is so small. You know, it just makes it harder to work on. Of course, you don't have to work on it. You bring it to Apple, you're not going to open it up. But the point is, even with the authorized Apple people, they think it's really difficult to work on today's Macs.
Right, and there's. From what I understand, as much glue on there as there are screws.
So. Yeah, there are. It's just a lot of it is glued now to it, and you have to break the glue bond. That's correct. Yeah, it is.
And what's it going to screw into? It's glass on the other side. So,
Well, they want to make it thin. They got to make it. They're making it so thin that there's not much left to screw it into. You know, exactly.
Yes, exactly. So, now we've talked about the reason that. Windows comes pre-installed. We talked about the reason that OS X comes pre-installed. The reason to get a Linux computer pre-installed with Linux is when you buy a computer with Linux pre-installed, like when you buy it from Apple, you can be sure that the hardware works beautifully with your chosen operating system. Okay, so the hardware may not have been designed specifically to run Linux, but the computer vendor has chosen that particular hardware specifically because it does work with Linux, any Linux. So you can install Linux on almost any, even though you can install Linux on almost any computer hardware, Mac, Windows, doesn't matter. The reason that you want to buy a computer with Linux pre-installed is because you want to get one that you're going to have that just works experience regardless of what version of Linux you choose to install in the future. And, you know, that may not be for everyone, but as time marches on and computers become more and more
complex
appliances, you know, it's the internet client. There will be more and more people who want computers to just run out of the box and not have to tinker with them. There will always be people like me who enjoy tinkering, but I wanted to find out what the experience was in purchasing a computer that's designed to run Linux, and I'm not disappointed, not at all.
Can you? I mean, I cannot think of any device that has been given the opportunity to quote unquote tinker than the personal computer. I mean, you don't tinker with your television, you don't tinker with your phone, you don't tinker with your dishwasher or your refrigerator. I mean, you know, they just work, and it's taken it a long time. You can still tinker, but I think today, especially with these all-in-one computers, they really are just becoming appliances, and people are, for the first time, are really starting to look at, yes, granted, there'll always be tinkerers, always people will buy older cars and want it with carburetors and doing that, and, you know, and I mean, Charles Tindall is a perfect example. He loves to tinker with old cars, but the point is, today's modern cars, you know, are basically computers on wheels, and you need the proper equipment to work on it, and you have to be certified to do that. I think with the sophistication and complexity of these devices today, I think you're finding less and less tinkering.
Yeah, well, let's face it. You mentioned that today's computers are some of the only things that you tinker with other than cars, but let's face it, they were originally, the personal computer is and was designed to be the personal computer, and they were designed by tinkerers and hackers like Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs and the people at, you know, at Xerox and the people at IBM. These were folks who liked to tinker, and so they built machines that they could tinker with. And although they have become very proprietary, and over time they've become less and less tinkerable, if that's a word, although that has happened, their origins were in an environment where tinkering was expected. You know, if you remember the original home computers for tinkerers, for people, hobbyists.
And, yeah, exactly.
You know, the TI-99/4A were clubs all over.
It makes sense, their roots are based in the tinkering mentality, and it's taken 30-some-odd years, longer actually, for them to finally rise above that. I mean, you really can't tinker with an iPad anymore. You know, the computers are getting to the point where they're not supposed to be tinkered with. Even when you look at today's desktops, you look at the Mac Pro, that's still the desktop-class computer. You look at that, that's like a cylinder. Yeah, you can open it up and you can put things into it, and but even that is really being designed so not to don't tinker with it, you know.
Right. You know. Exactly. Yeah, and the Apple computers, especially their laptops, are a prime example of how much of an appliance these things have become over time over the last 30 years. And the other example, something that I haven't mentioned up until this point, is the Chromebook. The Chrome operating system from Google is designed to run on very specific hardware as well. And it is, unlike Apple, there are many manufacturers of Chromebooks these days, certainly not as many as there are for Windows computers, but they're required to build that hardware with some very specific requirements from Google. So although it's a little less stringent than Apple, they're tending more towards a closed-in, locked hardware system as well.
Yeah, exactly. So there it is.
There it is. So if you want to buy a computer, you like Linux, you've given it a try, but you don't like Linux because of the fact that you've had to tinker to make it work on the computer hardware that you're currently using, your next computer, instead of buying a Windows computer and trying Linux on it, buy a computer that already has Linux on it, and you'll be much happier if that's the kind of person you are.
Right.
If you're a tinkerer, you'll be less happy. Well, I shouldn't say that. you can still tinker, because I will. I just won't be fighting with it to make it work.
You know, because we come from a generation of where tinkering was sort of expected, but
that's crazy.
I think in the next 10 years, when the generation or 15 years, you know, comes around again, and people are raised with all in ones, and they want their stuff to work, and
you can tell it's already happening. Kids today just don't, and kids, I mean, you know, about the 14, 15-year-olds, about 6 or 7 years younger than I am, they really don't know how computers work. Yeah. They just have a phone or a computer at home, and they press a button, and they know how to use them. They just don't know how they work.
Right. They don't. They've never taken one apart. The screwdriver. They know what a screwdriver is. You know.
They don't care.
They don't care. They don't want to pop the lid. You know, look inside. They don't. You know, they don't want.
But I mean, that's the goal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, have we lost something as a society because we're raising a generation of non-tinkerers? I mean, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. It's like anything else, though. I'm sure there's a pendulum here, and it'll swing back the other way eventually. And, you know, there'll be a whole generation that doesn't care how things work, and the next generation will be, Dad, how could you not care about this? I've experimented with this toaster, and I've taken it apart 18 times, and it runs Linux, and I can reprogram it, and it's now a bicycle. You know, I don't know.
you have to imagine that when cars were first sold, you know, there were no mechanics that you could take them to. You kind of just bought one, and then you had to know how they worked, and you had to take them apart yourself.
That's true.
You know, nowadays, I can barely change my own oil. It's, you know, not everyone has to know how to do everything with a computer or with a car or with anything. It's just, you know, as long as people are still interested in it, because you definitely don't want something as important as technology, you know, being a small portion of your, you know, of your education. Because they're more and more important, so they should have more relevance.
Well, also, the other thing is that I think we're getting to a point. I mean, you know, we were talking with Intel just the other night, you know, where the 14-nanometer, and we're coming to the 10-nanometer technologies. The things are getting so flippin' small that you can't tinker with them. They're just too tiny. You know, there's nothing left to tinker with, you know. The point is, you know, we're talking the days where you had the cards and you could take them and sort of in the slots, you know, and you could see the discrete components on them and the fans. We're getting to the point where the technology is becoming so advanced that there's really nothing left to tinker with, you know, except the operating system, maybe, you know.
Yeah, and just an example of that is all the wearable technology.
Yeah.
The power in a watch today is more than some of the original computers.
Oh, gosh, yes. By many times.
That's just the watch.
Yeah, by many times. By many times. Yeah.
I think this has devolved into a kids these days. Back in my day.
Right, back then, I had a real watch with a spring and a balance wheel.
You had to wind it.
Yeah, right. None of this.
Several times a day.
Yeah. I had a self-winding watch, and I had to walk in order to generate
the
power.
Grandpa, you're talking time was beamed into your head from space like it is today?
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
This is what happens.
It's going to be fun when we finally get the implants into our eyes, and they're satellite connected, so, you know, date, time, everything is just beamed straight to your head.
Yeah, try tinkering with that. Okay. I got to get this thing out of my eye. You know, where's a screwdriver here? Let me see if I can. No, it gets to the point where it's just too small. There's nothing left to tinker with. You know, I mean, this Apple Watch is coming out in January. There's nothing to tinker with. As far as you can be concerned, it's a solid lump. There's nothing to mess with.
Well, you're talking about the Apple Watch, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the Apple Watch, the Apple computer, the Apple phone, the Apple everything. You can't tinker with Apple.
Yeah.
That's not the point of Apple.
Well, I know. Oh, you tinkered with it. You replaced you got your special screwdriver and you replaced the screen, you know, and everything.
I got a repair kit and I can take apart my phone, but I'm not tinkering with it. I'm replacing
parts. Yeah, that's right.
You know, saying, hey, I got this graphics card, and it would look really great. If I could just figure out how to fit this into my iPhone, it would be blazing.
Yeah.
It's not tinkering. That's just repairing.
It's just repairing, yeah. They're non-tinkerable. I mean, there's nothing to tinker with. And I think that's the direction we're heading with. I mean, that's where we're going. These things are all going to be so advanced that you know, that's it. You know, there's nothing
well,
there.
Everybody and their brother is making a new smartwatch these days. I mean,
no.
So Samsung has it, and Apple has it, and even Will I Am is coming out with a lineup.
Yeah, we saw it last night. It's a bracelet.
Yeah, so amazing, amazing, amazing. And
remember, it used to say no user serviceable parts inside. You know,
right.
On the back of TVs. Well, now that was on TVs, and of course now that's pretty much everything these days. There's nothing left to tinker with.
Well, we've made it to the age of the Dick Tracy watch.
Yeah, that's it.
Kind of. As long as there are gamers, I think there are people who are going to tinker.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah,
maybe. Well, let's move into emails. Yeah, I mean we're waxing nostalgic, you know, and that's nice. I mean, you know, the point is, but I think they're all valid points.
There's something to be said for philosophizing. There's something to be said for falafel.
Falafels are good.
Yes, they are. They're delicious. All vegetable. All right, so let's go. We're going to move into email, and if you're following along, go to our show notes page, you know, on today's show, 10/16/2014, and click on the email link, and then you can follow and read along all the emails that we're doing. And we're going to start off with someone who happens to be in our Computer America chat room. Internet Ken sent an email to you, go ahead.
He was commenting on my choice of System 76 as a computer. And this actually wasn't an email. This was on our Google Plus community.
All right.
So, Ken, I had posted my selection. I actually wrote an article about this for the website, about my selection of System 76, covering some of the same things that we just spoke about in this event here. Kate, Larry, you bought a pre-installed system and then replaced the operating system? As far as I know, Linux laptop vendors don't design systems from the ground up. For example, System 76 uses Clevo systems, and he provides a link to Clevo in his you'll find that in the show notes, of course. Are they guaranteed to run newer versions of distributions when they come out? I just installed OS X Mavericks on a 2010-era iMac that is ported configuration by Apple. Mm-hmm. It is rare that I have a PC that isn't fully supported by Linux, even the PCs that I've built that are currently running CentOS and Ubuntu. Mm-hmm. And I responded back to Ken, and in the time before the break, I think I can get through this response. I'm just going to read it right from the Google Plus page. I've provided a link in the show notes there, and it is, I think it's the bottom as we're talking here. No, second from the bottom response comment on there. So I responded to Ken saying, my desire was to buy a computer that would let me use Linux without the need to hassle with making the hardware work. I considered a MacBook and dual booting, and I considered a used MacBook and installing Linux natively to root in. I considered Apple hardware because of the Linux community support for the hardware. I also considered a ZA Reason or a Zareason pre-installed with Linux Mint. In the end, I chose System 76 for the specs as well as for the Linux support. You're right, most computer hardware is well supported by Linux these days, but there is always the chance that something will require some tweaking. Sure, I have the skills and experience to put Linux on almost any computer at hand, but that small tweak could take hours of research and trial and error to fix. Mm-hmm. Even if it were to take just a few minutes to fix, I simply don't want the hassle. I'm tired of it. I wanted a no-risk way to install the OS I wanted, have a computer with the specs I wanted, and have it all work out of the box. The MacBook didn't meet the specs I wanted and didn't have replaceable parts. The selection of ZA Reason, Ultrabooks, even their newest one, didn't have the specs I wanted. Mm-hmm. The System 76 met all of the hardware criteria, and ensured that when I replaced the provided Ubuntu, I would be able to install Mint and have everything just work. That's how I ended up buying a computer with Linux pre-installed and then replacing the OS with another version of Linux. P.S. Having said that, I actually tried using Ubuntu. I really did. I just didn't like it. It's the way Unity works, and that turns me off. Sorry, Canonical, you just aren't addressing my needs.
Uh-huh.
And Ken responded back. He said, I used to hate Unity too, but I got used to it, and it's my preferred personal desktop. And let's see here. I'd like to hear a review of your experience with the hardware and the OS install. Future show topic, maybe. Maybe so.
He used to hate it, but after a while he liked it. Now,
yeah.
Why is that?
Well, you know, it's I've used it for a little while, and it does grow on you after a while. The folks at Canonical have designed Ubuntu to make it easy to use,
mm-hmm.
but they've got a quirky way of doing things that's different in some cases from most other Linux distributions, mm-hmm. and they've done that for whatever their own reasons are. But generally speaking, it works quite well. I just don't like the way that the search works. I don't like the way that you have to look for an application. I like a drop-down menu where you click the applications menu and you navigate to whatever application that you want, or that you click on the applications menu and you type in either the name of the program you want to run or the function that it performs, like word processor or spreadsheet or text editor,
mm-hmm.
and it finds it and you run it from there. It works sort of like that with Unity, but not quite. And there are a few other little quirky things about Unity that I don't like either. Now, of course, I could install Ubuntu and I could put Cinnamon desktop environment and replace Unity, and I could go in and put in the multimedia drivers that Ubuntu doesn't supply out of the box, but they make it very easy to install. But then what would I have? I would have Linux Mint, so why not just start from Linux Mint? That was my rationale. In my opinion, it used to be a joke. I think it's more truth than joke. Linux Mint is Ubuntu done right.
Okay, there it is. There you go, Ken. Okay. You heard it from Larry. Now you know why. Thank you. But I think that's really funny. That, I mean, after all this tweaking, and then what do I wind up with? You know, exactly.
Well, and that's it. I mean, one of my first Linux distributions to run was Ubuntu. And not the first, because I experimented with a few failed attempts at trying to get Linux to work, but from my Windows days into my first Linux days. But Ubuntu was the first one that was designed to just work out of the box as software, and I liked it at the time. Mm-hmm. It's when they changed to Unity that everything went downhill for them,
okay.
In my opinion at least. Mm-hmm. And others agree with me, and many would disagree. So.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show. Thank you, Marty Winston. Yeah. Again, for that another new Sid Bolton interview. Mm-hmm. It is our all Linux show tonight with Larry Bushy, and we finally got to the emails, mm-hmm. About just whatever Linux emails you get, and we just finished up with Ken, and now we're moving on to Mr. Joe
in Ireland.
In Ireland, yes, and he wants some information about backups. Joe writes, "Hello, gentlemen. I am a recent listener who's enjoying going back through the previous episodes to help me, on my first steps to using Linux as my day-to-day. I'm finding your podcast to be very informative with excellent practical advice." That's our goal.
Mm-hmm.
Could you consider doing a piece on online backup services, things like CrashPlan and Mozy, etc.? I invested in CrashPlan already, but I'm not sure how well it runs on the Ubuntu-based distros. Also, I'm setting up a home server for backups, Plex Media Server, and maybe as an occasional family desktop, using an HP N54L microserver. In general these days, would you recommend going with the 60? Am I giving up compatibility in terms of availability of Linux drivers by going 64-bit? Mm-hmm. Many thanks, Joe in Ireland. Well, there's two questions in there. So for backups, yes. The online services, because they're online, they will take a while to get all your backup up to the cloud. And I haven't had a lot of experience with those. I do know that there are several that are compatible with Linux, but I haven't tried them, so I can't really comment on them. If you're interested in backup to a hard drive or to disk, or there are any other local kinds of backups, there are plenty of options there. You can use services like Dropbox or Google's cloud storage to do storing of files, maybe not a backup per se, depending on how much storage is available to you for free and how much you're willing to spend extra for it. You could probably do a backup of mm-hmm. your entire data set up there. But for local backups, whatever comes on your Linux distribution is probably a fine choice. There are lots of different ways to back up a Linux computer. But the choice made by the distribution of Linux is probably going to work just fine. They all work very similarly. Some use a little different technology than others. Some automate manual command lines, and others have special ways of doing the backup in an encrypted fashion and so on. So it really depends on you. If what you want to do is make a bit-for-bit copy of your hard drive on an equally sized hard drive, so basically image your hard drive, CloneZilla is a great way to do that kind of thing. I know you didn't ask about that, but that's another kind of backup that you might be interested in. So if you have a spare hard drive that's the same size or larger, you can make a bit-for-bit backup onto that hard drive using something like CloneZilla, which is a live CD or a live USB stick that you boot from and then make a copy of your installed hard drive onto a spare external hard drive, and you can restore from there if you wish. And there are a couple of ways to do that with CloneZilla. You can make a bit-for-bit image copy, or you can copy a partition, a hard drive partition, or a portion of your hard drive to a file on that external drive. You can store it onto a CD or a DVD as well if you wish, and then restore from that, although the restore is a little more involved when you do it that way rather than a clone. If you clone it, you can just clone it back if you need to do a backup and a restore. So lots of different options there. The one that I'm least familiar with are the online storage possibilities. Craig, have you had any experience with those?
The bit for bit is real nice because basically, if you think about it, there is so much work involved in setting up your hard drive, and if you back up the files or the applications, then you have to reinstall everything. You can spend not hours but days getting your system back the way you had it before something happened. Whereas with a clone or a bit for bit, basically, it doesn't matter. As long as if you do a backup, you know, within a reasonable amount of time, you know, if you do it every couple, at least once a week, maybe longer, you're going to have everything back the way you absolutely had it before something went wrong. And it's just sweeter. You know, it's just nicer. You don't have to do all that work again.
Right. And that kind of work is very typical of backing up and restoring a Windows PC from scratch by reinstalling the operating system. Mm. It can be days to get it back up and running.
Exactly.
Now,
yeah.
with Linux, you don't have that trouble. What I do when I upgrade, and with Ubuntu, they do provide an in-place upgrade. So you can upgrade from one version to another in place, much like you can with OS X, for example.
Yeah.
You can just upgrade it right online like that. I run Linux Mint, and although they do provide some upgrades, I go the more cautious route. because I like to have things installed cleanly. And so when I do an upgrade, I make a backup copy of my home directory or my home partition, and then set that aside. And then I completely wipe out the hard drive, install Linux from live media, and then I put everything back into the home directory, reinstall the applications, and within, I'd say, the longest it's taken me to do a restore that way, or an upgrade and restore, has probably been a day, and that's when I was interrupted with a bunch of things. Elapsed time, though, it was probably maybe more like 2 hours. That's a significant amount of time, but it's certainly not days and days and days,
because exactly.
You know, the drivers are all there typically.
Yeah.
All you really have to do is set up your printer if you've got one. And the nice thing about Linux, when you do your backup of your home directory, all of the settings for all of the applications are there.
That's nice.
So, you know, if you install your operating system and install your all your applications, and in Linux Mint, they provide a Mint backup tool that allows you to backup all of your applications as well and restore them from that backup. So you do your upgrade, you do the restore from your applications, and then you move over your hard drive and everything just works. Your home directory, rather, and everything just works. So it's not nearly so difficult. So Joe asked a question about 64-bit as well. No, you're not giving up anything these days by moving over to 64-bit, Joe. 64-bit has been around long enough that it has pretty much become the standard for operating systems, whether that's OS X or Windows or Linux. And although if you have a 32-bit machine, you can get a 32-bit version of Linux to run on there, there's no reason not to go 64-bit, especially if you are planning on dual booting with Windows and you want a version of Windows that can address the larger amounts of RAM that's available in today's computers. You definitely want a 64-bit version. Linux doesn't suffer from that limitation. And so although you might have a 32-bit version with 8 gigabytes of RAM, it will still address that 8 gigabytes of RAM, even with a 32-bit version of Linux, not the case with Windows, but a 64-bit version will address even more RAM than a 32-bit. And you're not really, driver compatibility on 64-bit systems, not an issue anymore. It used to be 5 years ago or so, but not now. Not an issue.
Exactly. All right.
And somebody, I think it was Jonathan in the chat, said that I should do that email with an Irish accent, and I wouldn't embarrass myself or the people from Ireland by trying to do that.
We wouldn't do that. No. Now, look at this. Someone says Bill. Bill is your...
my co-host.
Co-host, yeah. Made a mistake? No way.
Maybe. Well, let's see. So Paul commented on Bill's mention of encryption, and he wrote, "Hello, Larry." He didn't address his email to Bill, so I guess he wanted to avoid that whole thing. He said, "The thing that concerns me the most is that Bill conveys to the listeners that you can't access an encrypted drive with a live CD." Again, an almost word-for-word quote from the show. Bill, quote, "Yeah, that's kind of the reason you encrypted it. You can't access it with the live CD," unquote. If you do any basic Google searching, you'll find that indeed this is possible. Looking forward to all your shows, especially the next feedback show. Thanks.
Before you go on, we always say we'll take phone calls when they come in. On the show, and we certainly, you know, as long as it's on a the topic of Linux, we will do that. So we're going to go out here to 916. 916 is, let's see, where is that? That
Sacramento.
Is, yeah, Sacramento, California. Sacramento caller, Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hi, how are you? How can we help you? Okay, well, he must have thought it was funny. Okay, so let's continue on.
Laughing with us, not at us.
I'm sure.
Might have just been someone calling in to listen to the show from the...
It's possible.
Phone.
It's possible. We'll just assume that. All right, so...
Okay, so moving right along. So what Paul was talking about here is that we received an email from a listener who had encrypted a hard drive. It may have been Paul, actually, who had encrypted a hard drive and lost the encryption keys because they had I think if I remember correctly, they had reinstalled the operating system after a crash or something. They were distro hopping from one distribution to another. And so they decided to try, a switch. And unfortunately, they had encrypted the hard drive and did not back up the keys with separately from the encrypted hard drive. So the keys were on the encrypted hard drive. That's like locking your keys in your car, and so we made the comment that you can't break the encryption without the keys. And so Bill's comment was, yeah, that's the reason you encrypted it in the first place, is so that a hacker can't get into it. If you can unencrypt it without the keys, what would be the point of encrypting it? A bad guy could do that at any point in time. And I think that Paul is referring to when he talks about Google searching and finding that you can indeed unencrypt a hard drive that's been encrypted, even with Linux encryption, you'll find that all of those results that you get in that Google search depend on you having the key. So there are some tools you can use to use the key to unencrypt it and get your data off. But if you don't have the keys, you're not unlocking that encrypted hard drive, no matter how hard you try, even with a live CD. It's not going to let you in there unless you have the key.
Mm-hmm. Well, there it is. So basically, is Paul correct or Bill correct?
I think Bill's correct. I think Paul did some Googling and found, yeah, there were some posts that allow you to unencrypt with a live CD, but when you actually go in and read those posts, read those articles, mm-hmm. they require you to have the key backed up somewhere. And this particular listener did not. So he was out of luck.
All right. So then let's move on to Ken. He posted this in the Going Linux Google Plus community, right?
Yeah, he made a comment that Netflix on Linux has with no user agent changes, ? I'm at work currently on Windows 7 and not at my Linux box in my office. Anyone tried it on Ubuntu or Mint yet? Mm-hmm. And what he's talking about there is that Netflix has made itself compatible with Linux. You had to jump through a whole bunch of hoops to make it work. You had to go into your browser and change the user agent and make it look like if you were running Firefox, make it look like it's Firefox running on Windows or something like that, to fool Netflix into letting you play Netflix on the Linux version of Firefox or any other browser for that matter. Well, Netflix made a change and now they're letting you view their, pay them to view their movies on Linux, just as so they'll take money from Linux users as well as they'll take money from Windows and Mac
users. Equality. That's what we like to hear.
And that's all we ask. Just consider us up there with a legitimate operating system, okay?
It kind of surprised me, though, that, even though it's just the operating system and Netflix generally just runs in a browser. Like, it's not, you don't have to really install anything. Maybe Microsoft Silverlight, but, as Netflix is generally just a browser deal. So, it surprised me to hear that it wouldn't run on Linux.
Well, yeah, and they had done something to disable it, obviously, and I think a lot of software developers who don't know anything about Linux are a little cautious about making their software compatible with Linux because they're worried they're going to have to support it. They don't have the skills to support it, and so they avoid the whole topic by making it incompatible with Linux or making it so that it won't run on Linux. And I suspect that that may have been the case with Netflix, and perhaps they've gotten some Linux users over at Netflix that finally figured out, hey, we can make this work. Let's turn that on.
Yeah. Maybe the head in the sand wasn't the best approach. So, well,
yeah.
Good news for Linux.
That way. Yeah, good news for Linux. Netflix now works, so you can fork over more of your money.
Well, we got about 6 minutes left. I think we have time to do maybe one more email.
That's good because we only have two.
So. Yeah, so which one do you want to do?
We've got enough time for Rainey's.
Rainey,
email.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So listener Rainey is having problems with a podcatcher. Hmm. Hi, Larry and Bill. I've been enjoying your show for quite a while now. However, lately I have noticed that the podcast feed, that's the Going Linux podcast feed, on AntennaPod wouldn't update anymore. AntennaPod is a podcatcher that runs on Android devices. After removing the feed, I tried to add it again. Every time I do this, AntennaPod is giving me an error and simply stops. This is the only program I have a problem with, since GPodder works fine, and even on a Zoom, it updates. Zoom? I haven't heard of that.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Do you think this might have something to do with the XML? I have also reached out to the creator of AntennaPod, but haven't heard anything back yet. Out of about 8 podcasts that I am subscribed to with AntennaPod, only Going Linux is misbehaving. Is there anything else I can try? Thank you for all your good work, all the good work you do, Rainey. Well, in our email exchanges with Rainey, or rather our exchanges on Google Plus as well, because he started this out in email, I reached out to our Google Plus community to ask if anyone else was having a problem. It turns out some of them were. And it turns out that some of them reached out to the AntennaPod developer, just like Rainey did. Sorry for the phone ringing.
Okay, I thought it was my fax machine.
No, my fax machine. Yes, I still have a fax machine.
Yeah, I do too. I just admitted that. Although I had to pick it up on the first ring. That's all.
Yeah, well, we only have the one line. So anyway, back to the issue here before we have the chit-chat here. So to make a very long story short, after some exchanges with the AntennaPod developer, the software developer, you've got to love open source development, open source software, because you can reach out to the developer. He did a little bit of research, and we made some suggestions, and it turns out that the chapters that we use and we've been using for the past dozen or so episodes has some what wasn't being recognized by AntennaPod as a valid XML tag. Mm-hmm. And the AntennaPod developer made the fix, pushed out the update, and within, I think it was about 2 or 3 days, we had a new version of AntennaPod, and everybody was up and running and listening to the Going Linux podcast without any problem.
Cool.
On AntennaPod once again.
All right.
That's just an example of open source development at its best. And this happened to be a something that was designed for Android, but the same sort of thing happens just about every day with Linux and Linux applications. You can find the developer of these applications and you can write to them and they will respond, because that's what the Linux community does and the open source community does. We're a community of tinkerers who love to tinker, and we design software and we give it away for free because we want to. That's kind of the way it works. And that's why Linux is free, is because everybody wants to give it away for free. And they can. And
yeah.
There's a license that allows you to do that. And it all works out. Kumbaya.
Can we try Rob tries an extension? If we got
sure.
About 3 minutes left? Okay.
Yeah, we can do this.
Okay.
So our last mail is from Rob. He writes, I can't get the Nemo Media Columns extension to work in 32-bit Mint 16 or 17. I'll explain what the heck that is in a minute. It installs with no errors. It just doesn't work. I launch Nemo, go to the list view, right-click on the column headers, and the extra columns simply aren't there. I've tried completely removing and reinstalling Nemo and Nemo Media Columns, no luck. So far, I haven't been able to get Nemo Media Columns to work in Mint 13 installed. I've only been able to get to work in Mint 13 installed from Backport Repository. Anybody else had trouble with this? After doing some research on it, yes, there's a bug in the software. Nemo is the file browser in Linux Mint, and it's designed to work with the Cinnamon desktop environment. So it applies to a very small group of Linux users who are using the Cinnamon desktop and using the Nemo file browser. And this plugin actually allows you to add columns to the detailed display of files that are specific to media. So it gives you things like the length of the media and that sort of stuff. Mm. And there's a bug in that. They haven't fixed it yet. There is no workaround. It just isn't going to work until they fix it, and they haven't fixed it yet. So it's a waiting game.
Stand by. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
stand by. It will be here soon, I'm sure.
So, Larry, what's the next Going Linux topic going to be, and when can people hear it?
Okay, well, our next episode will be an in-depth look at some accessibility software on Linux. Bill and I have already recorded it. It will come out right after this Computer America episode. So that will be the next one. And then following that, of course, will be our listener feedback episode. We have some voicemails and some other things that we can
You can always go to Going Linux Podcast. Just go to the correspondence right at the top of any Computer America page at our on our website, and you'll see Larry Bushy. You can see a picture of him there, and just click on it, and it'll take you directly to the Going Linux Podcast, and you can add that to the list of things that you should be listening to, especially if you're interested in Linux. Again, thanks, Larry, for being with us here tonight. Always a pleasure. And we'll see you next month on the third Thursday of the month. And thank you all for being with us here tonight, and we will see you on tomorrow night's show. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.